It started out as a social media idea, and it kind of evolved into a trilogy. This is The Bubble. I'm Mike Bonner. He's Montana Samuels, and we're concluding our three-part series on social media today, and it's really an exciting one. Jessica Contrera of the Washington Post is speaking with us about social media. She wrote a wonderful story a couple years ago about the screen age. Basically, children growing up with their faces in their phones, so to speak, and what the implications are. And when you look at what we've been talking about a couple of years later and what students in Parkland are doing through social media, it's really interesting to go back and reexamine that.
Right. And as happenstance would have it, Jessica has also recently done some reporting in Parkland with a few of the kids at least, who have been speaking out on social media or attend the school in which the shooting happened. And it was interesting to hear her discuss sort of the dichotomy of where social media is beneficial and where social media can be detrimental if not organized or led down the right roads.
Which is a lot of what we just kind of discussed. Right. With great power comes great responsibility. So there's a lot of great things that social media can offer, but there's also some negatives. And she brought up a few things that we hadn't thought of before either. So it was a really, really interesting, insightful. You learn a lot from the conversation. Again, Jessica Contrera of the Washington Post. You can follow her on Twitter at MJ Contrera, Contrera. And without further ado, we'll just jump right into the interview.
Jessica, how's it going?
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. So we, in the sort of aftermath of Parkland and then students sort of rising up and building a voice for themselves in the activism communities via Twitter and social media, when we came across your piece, we found it interesting that you had profiled a 13-year-old at the time. And we had thought that timeline was interesting because now we're seeing people who are this age in 2016, they're around the age of a freshman in high school. So we thought it'd be interesting to sort of get your thoughts on what you thought about social media and its uses amongst 13-year-olds in that age at the time of the interview, and then sort of how you transitioned to seeing it, if you see it differently now, post-Parkland, or just in general, how it's transitioned to something that kids can use to build a brand of sorts.
Right, right. Yeah, no, that's a really good question. And I was actually in Florida with some of those kids a couple of weeks ago.
Right.
So I got to kind of see it right up close. And I guess what I would say is, I felt the same way then that I do now, that it is, you know, an incredibly powerful tool that can be used for really wonderful things. And it's also something that can be used for, you know, it can have a really detrimental effect. And,
right.
And I think you could see that, with the Parkland kids, with, on one hand, they were getting so much attention, they were getting their message out. And on the other, they were being attacked. And while they might be, sort of used to that at this point, a little bit cynical, I think sort of maybe the long-term effects of that are not the most healthy. I don't think anybody goes through that and just doesn't mind, And so with Catherine, the girl that I spent a few months reporting on, my colleague and I were doing a series called The Screen Age that sort of delved into a lot of this stuff. We wanted to understand, how technology was changing childhood, and we wanted to understand it from the perspective of the kids themselves. So we tried really hard to make all the stories, really focus in on kids and kids who would allow us to spend, multiple, weeks and months with them so that we could really get to know what their lives were like. And I think you could see it in a number of different ways with Catherine, with all the kids we wrote about, that it's a good thing and a bad thing all at the same time.
And so something that just sort of came to mind when you were explaining the different types of response that the kids who attend Parkland and have decided to sort of speak out gathered. Did you find in your reporting that you saw similarities in kids who you thought maybe were more apt to be able to deal with the type of criticism that comes with having a platform that you speak out against? Or do you find in general, in your experience, that kids of that age fall not into the trap, but are generally susceptible to the same types of like trolling behavior online that most all of us are.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, it's kids dealing with bullying, right, mm-hmm. in a different form, whether it's from people that they know or strangers online. You know, you're going to have some kids who are able to brush it off easier than others.
Right.
I think what's interesting is, you know, all the little subtle things that you might not realize are going on. So even amongst the kids who are, you know, tweeting about Parkland, who are students at MSD, you know, some kid might tweet a very similar thing to their friend. Their friend gets, you know, 500 likes and thousands of retweets and, you know, might get retweeted by a celebrity. And
right.
the other kid doesn't. And their message might have been very similar. I mean, the internet is a flaky, confusing thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so what kind of messages are those kids getting from that? Whether it's the positive reinforcement, the lack of positive reinforcement, you know, kids put a lot of stake in how they present themselves online and how other people perceive that. So I think it's more complicated than just the idea of, you know, a stranger telling them they're stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Jessica, I remember when your story came out, I shared it with a lot of my friends, and we had a really great discussion on it, kind of about
Thank
that.
You.
Yeah, really well done, and it was a great conversation, too, kind of talking about the self-identity, the identity that comes from social media, as you were just kind of talking about in terms of likes and retweets, or I guess likes on Instagram, retweets on Twitter. And we've talked many times on the podcast through this series that we've done about, you know, the power of social media in terms of the voice you get. It's a megaphone, but also that responsibility. And what kind of responsibility does I guess society or even parents have in terms of that responsibility through social media? It's a great tool, as you said, but it can also do a lot of harm.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the most obvious thing that comes to mind is teaching your kids that what they put out in the world doesn't go away. You know, I think in some ways kids are more aware of that than, mm-hmm. than we realize. But, you know, just the reality is when you're 13, college feels so far away, you know,
yeah.
And it's not. I mean, you know, I imagine colleges at this point are going through kids' social media and seeing, you know, what kind of person are they? And, you know, we've seen the consequences for that for adults. And I hope that in the future, you know, we'll be more forgiving of kids and what they do on social media. But, you know, because we'll understand that we have all been there. But that said, you know, gosh, better safe than sorry, you know. So I think that's one really important aspect to teach kids from an early stage. You know, if you wouldn't want this printed in, you know, whatever seems to mm-hmm. be the thing that's most important, that if you didn't want every single person on Snapchat and all your teachers to see this, mm-hmm. then maybe don't put it on out there.
And it's certainly, you know, the drawbacks of social media. But when we look at the future of it and we see these students' voices being heard and being heard from as high up as, you know, President Donald Trump all the way down to their parents in Parkland, where do you see the future of the social media in terms of social movement, social activism? How powerful a tool can that be in the future?
Well, I think the Parkland kids are teaching us that mm-hmm. lesson as we speak. I mean, you know, I think I was more cynical a couple of weeks ago saying, well, you know, these kids are eventually going to get to this point that, you know, the parents from Sandy Hook did, where they
we
just
said the same thing.
that nothing is going to change. And yet, you know, here's the Dick's Sporting Goods and Walmart and you know, things changing. And so I think that's really important to remember. I mean, you know, 2 years ago when we did the series, one of the things that we kept stressing that was important for us to show was that social media was not frivolous. You know, that's part of the reason why I chose Catherine as the focus of my story, because she had lost her mother and she was going through something hard and she was using social media to get through that.
Mm-hmm.
And what I thought that was, you know, important to tell someone who's, you know, kids these days and their apps, you know,
right.
Someone with that kind of a mindset that no, this is really shaping, you know, even a straight A student, you know, who's in a pretty good situation, it's shaping, you know, their lives and will shape sort of all of our futures. I think now, you know, 2 years later, people are a little more aware of that fact. And if, you know, whether it's the Me Too movement or the movement of these students, you know, that actual change comes from some of these social media movements, I think people will be more apt to take them seriously in the future.
Yeah, and so that sort of brings me to a piece I had highlighted in the story. A part that really stood out to me, you said that everyone wants to know what happens when the generation born glued to their screens has to look up and interact with the world. And as you said, in the course since the story originally ran to now, it seems to me as if rather so much than the kids having difficulty transitioning into a world where they have to look away from their phones, it seems at least partially like we're finding that the world is having to interact with this younger generation at their level. Would you agree with that?
Oh, totally. That's a really good point. I think if I had written that sentence now, I would probably end up very differently, right? So it's not that they have to look up, you know, I mean, yeah, that is true. I mean, that's still true.
Sure.
But just as much as equally true is, you know, what happens with, like, interact with the world. They're doing that, and they're not looking up from their screens to do it. So that's really interesting to me.
And I didn't mean to hold you to that what you wrote in 2016.
No, but that's a really good point. I mean, you know, even, you know, there are some obvious ways. Like, I think the story mentions Vine, and, like, mm-hmm. Vine is gone.
Right.
You know, there are some obvious things that show how quickly everything is changing.
Right.
But I think sort of on a more philosophical level, you can see it too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Vine's sort of an interesting point to look at. Not only how fast things change on the internet, but how sort of impactful they can be. One of the ways I see a similar impact that Vine had is SoundCloud. So, like, I'm really interested in the world of hip hop, and you look at different. It's almost as if, so you look at SoundCloud rap, and there's people like Lil Pump, who I reference on the podcast mm-hmm. far too much as sort of like a gimmick, but it really is. It's these kids who are 16, 17 years old who through the internet are creating this infrastructure in which they can thrive not only via online, but are actually making money off of it. So when you look to the future of social media, do you see the kids who were 13 in 2016 or born post 2000, do you see a world in which they really have to adapt to a space without social media, or do you see them using it more to their advantage and when it comes to like professionalism?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it probably depends on the kid. You know, I mean, there are so many kids that we talk to, and, you know, teachers who tell me, oh, yeah, my kids don't say they want to be a doctor. They say they want to be, you know, a YouTube star or mm-hmm. a live streaming star. All of those, you know, I think there's a tendency to sort of look down on a YouTube star or a live streaming star because it's just so foreign. Right. And we say, oh, well, you know, that thing's going to disappear like Vine did, and then they're going to have no skill set because they didn't go to college. But they probably already made more money than most people did by the time that they were, you know, 14. So I think that you will have kids who really thrive in that space. But that's not that different than, you know, sort of any business endeavor with new technology. You know, what I think will be interesting is what happens when those people do decide that that's not the avenue that they want to go down anymore. You know, when you have or when it wasn't chosen for them. I mean, I'm so interested in sort of these like family vloggers. And we wrote about one of them later in the series. Where, you know, the parents or the older siblings are filming the younger siblings from a young age. And, you know, what does that look like when the kid is in middle school? What does it look like when they go to college? You know, maybe we'll all have just documented ourselves so much along the way that it'll be totally normal. But I think there's, you know, the line between what we show to the outside world and what's still personal and private is really blurring. And I think that's really interesting.
Yeah. I think one of the interesting things that I've seen from the students at Parkland is how articulate and how they come across. I remember I one of the things that I think of is I was actually interviewed for a TV station. It was much different, but it was at a baseball game. But and my mom taped it, and I have it, and I just look like an idiot. I don't articulate very well. I just look like not a very intelligent person. And we didn't have cell phones. I had a cell phone for emergencies, and that was it. And you know, there's this aura of a generation that their faces are in their phones, and no one talks to anybody anymore. And there's no, but they speak so eloquently and articulate. And I'm right. curious what you took away from your experiences in interacting with them down in Florida.
Yeah. Well, two things. I mean, for one, you know, it's a similar sort of a weird comparison maybe, but you know, I always talk with my friends about how we look back at pictures of ourselves in middle school mm-hmm. and we don't look cool or up to date or, you know how to pluck our eyebrows and things like that. And because we didn't have access to it unless you were looking at, you know, and this is brought up in the story too, like unless, you know, your mom got People magazine, you didn't know sort of like what you were supposed to look like. And, you know, you would base it off advertisements, what your maybe, mm-hmm. but mostly what your friends were doing. And so that's, you know, that's no longer the case with like Instagram, et cetera. You know, not only are they constantly, you know, surrounded by images of like, here's how things are supposed to go. Here's how things look and feel in the adult world. And here's a tutorial on how to do them. You know, regardless of what it is, you know, whether it's makeup or whether it's, you know, taking on the NRA, like kids simply are growing up faster because they are aware of how the adult world works sooner. But I think that the other really important thing to remember, and the thing that the story that I ended up doing in Parkland was about, was yes, these kids are well-spoken and they're angry and, you know, they really are making change, but they're also still kids mm-hmm. and they have been through an unbelievable trauma and they're just beginning to, you know, understand sort of what the repercussions of that are going to be. The kids that I spent time with, you know, when you got them in the quiet moments when they were putting down their phone and they were talking to each other, they were talking about not being able to sleep or sleeping, you know, with their parents for the first time since they were babies. You know, they were jumping at the slightest loud noises. You know, they were having panic attacks. Like, all of those things are still very real. And I think that's important for everyone to remember, even as we applaud them, you know, for their speeches and the things that they're doing sort of in the public-facing way. In private, I think they're still going to be going through a huge struggle.
Yeah. And I think we spoke about that a little bit on the podcast, where it seems like because they were willing to speak out and because they did so in a way in which social media deemed was articulate enough to give attention to people who mm-hmm. were younger, it seems like a huge amount of pressure was put on these kids to sort of be the voices of guiding this massive national change. And I thought at the time that maybe it seemed a bit irresponsible of adults to put so much pressure on 16, 17-year-old kids, whether or not it be via social media or otherwise. So one thing I'm curious about in your time with them, did you see them as being more willing to speak out because they had that sort of expedited growth that social media brought? Or do you think they were just motivated to speak out because of this trauma that they were going through and they wanted to see something personally change by it? And do you think they're apt to continue that? Or do you think it'll, like, because that's a really high level of stress for kids who mm-hmm. just like get 500 retweets and they think, oh, okay, like I'm being heard. But eventually, like, the cynicism in us comes out and we think, like, okay, that'll eventually go away, right?
Mm-hmm.
And do you think obviously they feel so personally connected to this right now, but do you think they're going to be willing to deal with the sort of repercussions, but the judgment and things like that come with their position that if they choose to sustain that position?
Yeah, I don't know. It's really hard. I mean,
yeah.
You know, I worry about the message that it sends to, you know, it's not like this is one group of kids. I mean,
right.
We're really talking about a generation. Like,
right.
They're all paying attention to this. You know, they're all, you know, organizing marches in their individual area. And even if they're not going to participate in that, mm-hmm. they're going to be aware of it on social media. So I'm worried about the message that it sends when, you know, we applaud kids, you know, for speaking out, and we say, you know, they are finally going to, you know, maybe they will finally make a difference.
Right.
And we give them that belief. And then what if that doesn't happen? Right.
Right.
What if nothing still changes? I mean, you're telling a whole generation of kids that they can do everything possible, right? Forgo their emotional healing and channel it in their anger into, you know, shaking their fists at the NRA and
right.
and do everything that they possibly can, and still, if nothing changes. That's kind of how I felt originally. But again, I mean, things are already changing, right? So
right.
Mm-hmm. So they've already made an impact. So I hope that they come away less cynical than maybe millennials are.
Right. We can only hope, right? Well, Jessica, we really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today. And we appreciate your reporting and all of that. So once again, thanks so much.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for having me. And if anybody wants to read the other stories from this series, my colleague Caitlin Gibson wrote half of them, and hers are, I mean, truly amazing. It's just, if you search for The Screen Age and The Washington Post, it should come up.
I hope that lived up to the expectations. I think it did. It was just a really insightful, good conversation, which we really like on The Bubble.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite conversations we've had on the pod so far. I think not only did she share a lot of similar opinions that we had, but she also sort of challenged us to think in ways that we hadn't necessarily thought about social media and the way it interacts with youth and youth culture before.
I think the thing that I was like nodding my head as she was describing it was, because I hadn't thought of it, and I thought it was a really good point in terms of some of the students, you know, receiving thousands of retweets, and others mm-hmm. maybe not receiving for whatever reason. Is social media is a fickle beast, so to speak, and that does affect. It kind of goes back to her original story a couple of years ago, saying, you know, likes on Instagram mm-hmm. and the values of those and the self-valuing of that, it really means a lot, especially during a difficult time. I can only imagine
right.
what the consequences could or possibly be, or how that makes someone feel. It's something that I hadn't thought of before.
Yeah, and sort of parlaying off that, it's interesting to see social media, as I originally came to know, it was just a way to share things with your friends. And yeah, it definitely made you feel good when you got a bunch of likes or a bunch of retweets. But that was just any old thought. Now that these kids are really pouring they're putting their spirit behind something and getting positive affirmation that yes, you guys are doing a great job, whether it be a couple tens, twenties, hundreds of people, whatever the amount, it is going to be interesting to see, as Jessica sort of pointed out, what happens when either the steam behind the movement starts to fade a little bit, or what happens with the kids who aren't in Parkland, but say are hosting walkouts in Texas, whether or not they get the same support that these kids in Parkland have, and what that does to them psychologically in terms of, are they going to continue to think their voices matter?
It's interesting because we don't know this answer because mm-hmm. we don't know the future.
Right.
But as she brought up, and I hadn't thought of this either, there's a whole generation watching what's happening in Parkland, and there's
right.
a whole group of students across the country forming demonstrations and just speaking their mind in individual ways, whether it's through social media or, as we've talked about, the demonstration in front of the White House where
right.
Students laid out in front of the White House, walkouts. So mm-hmm. it's not going just in Florida. And if nothing comes of this, I'm curious to see what the response will be, but there's so much movement, as Jessica said, putting all of your everything, all of your energy into one movement and all of delaying your grieving
mm-hmm.
process
right.
to get this movement kind of started. And if nothing comes from it, I don't know how to, because we don't know the future,
right.
but I'd be really interested to see what comes from that.
Well, and I think that's the important part to take away from, at least that's what I'm taking away from our three discussions about this, is this isn't something that, there's no answer to this because we actually don't know what the next step, we don't even know what the next step technologically is for social media. So it's really difficult to try to pinpoint like, this is actually what's going to happen. It's just going to be something we have to continue to follow and are interested in for years to come, probably indefinitely.
We can go back on our own podcast a couple of weeks ago, and I believe, I don't mean to call you out, but you were saying, I don't know what's going to happen if this is any different. And as if we've seen, that there have been
some things
whether they're big changes or small changes, or that you can debate that all you want. What can't be debated is something has happened, which in the past we haven't seen anything happen.
Right.
So there has been some movement. Again, we don't know what the future is, but it is interesting because these kids have proved they've bucked the trend so far. So let's see what that does in the future. It's as we, it almost reminds me a little bit when we were watching, and this is kind of, you got to stick with me for a second here, but
okay.
I remember watching, you know, the hurricane coverage down in Florida and such, and people were asking, why can't you just tell where it's going to be?
Mm-hmm.
And basically the meteorologists were saying, well, you got to think, if a thing's going for 1,000 miles
mm-hmm.
and it goes off, you know, 1 mile to the
right.
east, not a big deal. But for over 1,000 miles, it's a really big deal. So these changes right now may not seem a whole lot. They may, well, sure, it's just Dick's removing the guns and stuff like that. It might not seem like big, but in the grand scheme of these students' lives or our lives or our grandchildren's lives, that's decades or centuries, how that veering off the path, even that we were already on, shifted a little bit what the future will hold.
Right. And it's the first step, right? We are... It's difficult to attempt to judge the result of something that at least I will presume is going to be a long-term mm-hmm. change after the first step. And I think that's important to remember. As far as the internet goes, like we've said, this is the bucking of the trend, because up until recently, nothing really has happened after these, and people have come out as sort of Twitter, and they've become like activists for the moment, if you will. But with this most recent stream of Twitter activism, something has changed. So, like you said, it'll be interesting to follow, but I think we are at the beginning.
Yeah, I don't think anyone would argue it's definitely a marathon and not a sprint. But we don't know what's around those corners. We don't know the course track of the marathon. So we're just kind of doing the race as it goes. So again, we'll see how it goes with the future. Again, we have to thank Jessica Contrera.
Mm-hmm.
Many, many thanks. You can follow her again on Twitter at MJ Contrera. We'll have her information linked to the pod.
And the stories she referenced as well. We'll link those as well.
Well, thanks for this. This is where you kind of, you close. I don't know your catchphrase line.
Well, this has been The Bubble, episode 8.5. He's Mike Bonner. I am Montana Samuels, and we hope you'll have us back.
You do so well.